Hello and welcome to another Not Writing From Experience, wink wink, episode of Dave Wright's podcast. I'm your host, Dave Wright. Each week here, I like to share the next chapter from my novel, Soul. As usual, if you would like to know more about this week's chapter, then stick around at the end. For now, let's get into it. This week is chapter 17, Levi Prime. Present day. I was slowly roused out of a dream that I was being burnt alive, but for some reason I was treating it more as an annoyance than death. I slowly came to as I heard the sound of someone trying to navigate the minefield of old plates of food and dirty clothes piles that were strewn around the floor of my generously labeled office. I tried to crack an encrusted eye, but it wouldn't play ball. I relaxed slightly when I heard them swear softly when they hit one of the piles of clothes that were particularly obstinate. Anyone intent on harm would not be swearing at dirty laundry, I hope. My good eye managed to finally open and lazily report back an image of Levi Prime coming towards me, hand outstretched to shake me awake. That jarred me to consciousness rapidly.
I'm up.
I mumbled, jerking upright in the seat. Avoiding his hand, I waved the man to the only spare seat in the room as I fished out a bottle of rotgut from the box next to me and shook it in his direction.
Breakfast?
The walking dead man had the gall to look at me askance. Shrugging, I pulled the top off and tried to wake up. It hit the ribs, reminding me in no uncertain terms that yes, they were still cracked and yes, they were still pissed. Levi sat there watching me, his bloodshot eyes matching mine as his thoughts visibly assembled themselves. You look like shit. I looked down, realizing I'd fallen asleep in my overcoat.
You don't look so great yourself, mate.
I replied, and as he flinched, I knew I shouldn't have said it. The man had lost his wife, his child, and his life, all in the space of an afternoon. I should probably cut the guy some slack. Anyway, I knew he was not here to inquire on my health and fitness.
I've not found him yet, Levi. Have some damn good leads, though.
He shifted as my mind swam back into the current day. I realized what I was doing. Spinning the cap back on, I disgustedly dropped it back into the box. I nudged aside a pile of books, giving me access to the music, and put on something to match my mood. A plate of long-discarded food was dislodged from the top of the speakers as sound filled the room. Thankfully, my freshly set nose couldn't process it. Though, from Levi's reaction, I should seriously consider making a charitable donation to my cleaner. God, I wanted another swig. We'll burn the place down and start again. You had leads last time. Why is this any different? He still sounded like he was speaking from the bottom of a damp well.
This time, from Bronski.
There was a glint in his eyes. Not hope. That had long since died in the man. A faint spark, maybe. I considered how much to give him. This was a man who could only see the edge if he looked up as he was falling. I didn't want to be the one who destroyed him. Working my tongue around in my mouth, tasting the gunk from sleep mixing with the rot gut, I had to stop.
The Seeker. He ran with the Barley Boys. Last time, I thought he was clean. I was looking in all the wrong places. He's as bent as a police captain. He ran with the boys, learnt the tricks, got into Dodge, stole some glitter, and scarpered. He had enough scratch to set up his own runners. But that's not what he was after.
This drew him in closer, a dangerous position to be in on that traitor of an armchair. What was he after then? Levi asked anxiously.
The Secret run with the Barley Boys for a while to get the lay of the land, to understand how a crew should be run. Remember back then, they were the only ones who were not filling the street with bodies.
Levi nodded impatiently for me to continue.
I can only assume he'd finally learned how to use the powers and saw his chance to grab a nice little seed fund.
Mentioning the Secret learned how to control the powers was a guess on my part, but from the look on Levi Prime's face, he might need some private time after this. I ignored the naked yearning on his face and pushed on.
Once he had that seed fund, he began to work on the heads of the groups, all except the Barley Boys and Bronski. I can only guess he was not sure what would happen going up against either crew. For the others, it was a simple proposition. Work for me or everyone you know and love, Everyone you might have even just met in passing dies. The lower ranks of the crew wouldn't even have to know there was a change in leadership, so the heads of the crews get to save face. Pretty perfect, actually.
I'd begun to admire the man. I was still not sure what I was going to do with him, even if I managed to find him. However, I knew what he would have gone through from the beginning, and it could not have been easy. Being a copy of another man and being set on the path of life without a choice, he had overcome the soul-crushing ennui of not knowing who you were and what your place in this world was, and obviously worked his way into a position of power that was unmatched in this city. Levi Prime was oblivious to my thoughts as usual, and he obviously knew what he was going to do. The same thing he always did. Levi stares at me a little too long for comfort, then starts slapping himself. I have my piece cocked and half-drawn, sitting across from five new Levis. One of them starts screaming like a gutted pig. Without breaking gaze with me, Levi calmly reaches out and runs his fingertips across the newborn's face. There is a sucking feeling to my eyes, as where a man stood, suddenly there was empty air, the dying sound still hanging in the room, fighting with the music to be heard. "Let's go pay him a visit," Levi Prime says, as if he had not just snuffed out a man's life in front of me. The copies shuffled around, unsure of their new existence. Shaking my head,
"Levi, we're not going in blazing to these guys. You asked me to find your seeker, and I will. My way."
I will admit my skin crawled as eight sleep-deprived, slightly crazed eyes stared at me. The Prime closed his, the air shimmers again, and suddenly we're alone. "Okay." Easing the hammer back, I take the bottle out for a swig and offer it to Levi again. He takes it this time.
"What would happen if you created another Prime?"
I ask as casually as you can while watching a man kill a bottle and five men. "Never happened before." A smile starts to play around his lips, a dangerous place to play. "Would be a lot of fun finding out." He dumps the empty and abruptly stands to leave. "Call me if..." He trails off. "Just call me."
"How's Miranda?"
I ask. The door clicks shut. That was my answer, I suppose. The music filling the air, I needed to make my next move. I just didn't know what that was. I felt a slight twinge lying to Levi. Bronski had told me where he thought he was hiding out, the Sunken Grand, a luxury three-story restaurant smoke den on the edge of Old Town. The meeting with Bronski had been fruitful. He had a good guess as to where the Seeker was, but no way of confirming it, except for just showing up at his door. That was not helpful. I'd come up with more and more incredibly stupid plans of how to get to the Seeker. Once I realized that I was trying to find a way of getting my hands on a maid's outfit, I knew I needed a break. No matter what I came up with, it would give it away that I was finally at the proverbial door, and the Seeker would scarper again, just like he had done so many years ago. That brought me to a stop, though. I'd always assumed that he kept an eye on my investigation back then and fed me those clues, that I'd been sloppy. However, yes, I am a terrible friend and questionable lover, but I am a goddamn great detective. How was he always one step ahead of me? I was not shit at my job. Even back then, I didn't telegraph what I was doing. I played it close to the chest, yet he always knew what I was up to. How? A sour thought occurred. I tried to dismiss it, but as much as it hurt, it felt right. I now knew how I could put that ghost to rest and confirm the Seeker's hideout in one stroke. I just really didn't want to be right. That was Chapter 17, Levi Prime. A nice, tight chapter, simply having Sol trying to recover and attempt to think. He's been running himself ragged, drinking too much, and making terrible choices. He's retreated to his safe haven, his squalor. There's a lot in this story that's obvious and overt, but some of the depression coding in it, I wonder if people who have not been through it pick up on it. There are a few terms that people who have not been through it or are not familiar with it might not be aware of. They might be helpful to know. Two of them are depression nest and the everything room. A depression nest is what happens during terrible bouts of depression. Cleaning is too much, you eat because you have to, but can't bring yourself to take the plates and cups back to the kitchen. Your clothes end up strewn on the floor, chair, whatever space you have free. Because you don't do washing, you end up wearing your clothes based on what doesn't smell the worst. So where you're hiding away from the world becomes a little nest, surrounded by your shame, knowing that it's wrong, but your mind shies away from it as a defense mechanism. The other is the everything room. You sleep, eat, exist, all in the same room, which means you don't leave that often, and as you're trying to avoid the world, you keep hiding there. There are a myriad of psychological problems with that, but it all flows together and becomes a prison you're not aware of. It's exacerbated if you have ADHD, as ADHD means that any clutter around you saps your willpower and mental stability. The science is not settled on why yet, to my knowledge, but if you are in a cluttered space, it slowly chips away at your mind without you realizing it. So Sol's office is both his everything room and depression nest. He leaves when he's forced to, but always retreats when he needs to feel safe. He never cleans and leaves the place a dump, not because it's romantic and noir, because he can't right now. That's something I always found interesting when reading or watching old noir detective stories. The really old ones, by the godfather of noir, Dashiell Hammett, they were writing with this style of no one's to be trusted and everyone will betray you. The characters are broken, but in a socially accepted way. They're clean and dashing, well-presented and functioning. When you learn more about who Hammett was and what he went through, it makes sense. It was not until much later, though, that you get the neo-noir style, with the seriously broken detectives, with banger lines like, "I keep two magnums in my desk, one loaded and the other keeps me loaded." I love that line. Where the drinking and smoking are because they've suffered serious personal trauma. Even then, though, it was during a time when the advice given if you said you were having mental problems would have been, "Buck up, son, don't think about it, you'll feel better." So them drinking, smoking, wearing rumpled clothes and hitting dames, that's not depression or PTSD, that was being hard-boiled. Now, I didn't want this story to devolve into a depression showground ride. Ooh, here comes self-harm corner, hold on tight, there's anxiety straight. So I tried to play it real, write the broken characters how I know what it's like to live with. They are not depression, they're people who simply exist with it. It's not the canvas of their life, but it does influence their colours and the way they paint. In this story, Levi Prime is the proto-dickhead neurotypical, as shown by the way he reacts to any obstacle or issue. He has one tool, his super, and even when it failed him in a soul-crushing way, it's still his go-to. His all-purpose hammer to every nail. He cannot fathom the struggles that others are going through, what impact his choices might have on them. To him, he handled it so obviously other people can as well. The kind of guy, if his friend opened up about their struggles with mental health, would say, "Go for a walk," or "Have you tried to just be happy?" It's not out of malice or stupidity. He simply would not understand why they can't be like him. So in this scene where he's with Sol, the man he is tasked with hunting down copies to be absorbed back into Prime, when he learns they have a lead, without thought he creates more copies. Problem solved. Also, in traditional fashion, I left an extra crumb for the readers. Sol thinks he now knows the Seeker has kept tabs on him. I tried to leave hints, but of course I think I made it too obvious, but that's because I know the damn story. Make your guess. The next two chapters are back to the Seeker, so you'll have to wait a few weeks to see if you are right. Well, that's all for this week. Don't forget, I have a Patreon up if you want to throw some support my way. You can find the details on my website, davewrights.com. That's Dave, WRIGHTS.com. Hopefully I'll see you all next week. Take care.